Welcome to the Smart Dating Academy podcast. I'm Bella Gandhi, the founder of Smart Dating Academy and your host. I started Smart Dating Academy in 2009 because I had this crazy knack of giving people dating advice that actually worked, that I took. I've been married for almost 25 years, and now my company helps people to date smarter and to find love. This podcast is meant to bring more love into your life, no matter where you are and what you do. And we're here to bring more life into your love. Smart daters, welcome back to the podcast. I am so excited to introduce you to my friend and your new friend, potentially new for you. You may already follow her. It's Kelsey Dara, and she is amazing. She's a content creator, prolific author, Hollywood celebrity podcaster, like has her second book coming out. Her first book is called Don't Effing Panic. Her next book, I'm going to let her tell you about it.
Yeah.
Kelsey, welcome to the Smart Dating Podcast.
Stop. I love you. And like you are, we've already like kiki'd and gabbed off camera. We're obsessed and in love with each other. And you make me sound so much cooler than I am. So thank you so much for having me. I already adore you and love you.
Oh my God, you are a competent, sparkly, beautiful millennial with a great story.
Right back at you.
Sister. So tell us your journey to this newest book. So kind of tell us about you and, you know, baby Kelsey to today.
Yeah. Okay. So once upon a time, my dad fell in love with my mom. No, I'm just kidding. I'll fast forward a little bit. I am the baby of the family. So I was always a big attention seeker. I grew up with like severe ADHD. My parents were like, throw her in theater school because she won't shut up. Fell in love with it. Knew I wanted to be in entertainment. Found myself, you know, at the cusp of the beginning of digital media and YouTube. So I started making YouTube videos, sketches with my friends, doing comedy, had moved out to LA by then. I knew about like the traditional Hollywood system, but it really was not for me. I didn't like waiting for someone to give me an opportunity. And I was like, I could just make this with my friends and be the boss of everything myself. So I'm going to do that. So that's why digital media really worked for me. I started in 2010, which to me feels like yesterday, but
that's like
apparently
OG.
Yeah, I'm OG in the digital world for sure. And I've gotten to see how much it's changed and where it's going. And it's very exciting and fun. And through all of that, I ended up getting a job at a popular media company called BuzzFeed, which is where I made a lot of my following and my audience. And that's where I started to really make content that was more me, about mental health and feminism and, you know, being a little bit more confident and bold in my creations. And that really resonated with people. So I thought, I guess I could do this thing where I just bare my soul for a living. I'm pretty good at it. Like I don't really have a lot of shame. So I did that. And for the last 6 years, I've been an independent creator. So making things online, podcasting, like you said, documentaries. And my favorite parts of this career has been writing my books, which the first one you had mentioned was Don't Effing Panic, which is all about panic disorder, depression and anxiety. And I really wrote that book because I wanted the advice and direction that no one gave me growing up. You know, I really had to find it all out the hard way. And I dove super deep into nervous system regulation before Huberman got to it. Okay. I was, again, OG about it.
Andrew.
Yes, exactly. And love him, though. He does a lot of great work. Good for him. And it really, of all the stuff I've made, the mental health angle of my career has really been the most impactful and rewarding, not only just with the audience, but for myself, because I've learned so much. And I figured if I'm going to go through all this pain in my life, the least I could do is turn it into purpose. And so what I realized after writing the first book, all about mental health and, you know, surviving, not wanting to kill myself, essentially, I thought I really had it all figured out. I was like, I am a mental health queen. I'm no longer having panic attacks. I can weather my depression. I'm good. until I got my heart absolutely obliterated. And everything I had learned for decades went completely out the window. And it turned out that like love was really my kryptonite. And it became like my next big battle and hill to climb. And so I've been working on this book for a couple years, and I am so excited. I told you this is like my first interview officially about it. And I can't wait for people to check it out.
We're so excited. So let's rewind. Tell us about Don't Effing Panic. What you're kind of give us the outline. Like, what do you think? Because I think dating provokes so many mental health issues, or mental health issues can provoke fears in dating. So, can you
Totally.
walk us through your journey and what you discovered there that can help the lovely person listening who might be pondering, maybe I'm ready to date, or oh my God, I'm never dating again. The thought of a date makes my stomach flip over like I'm getting on a roller coaster. And then I want to bridge to how that your world was shattered with love and what we've now learned about breakups and maybe improving mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. So my story with mental health started when I was actually very young. I thought that I had had my first panic attack when I was like in my late teens. I had a panic attack on an airplane, had no idea what was going on, thought I was having a heart attack simultaneously while losing my mind. It was like the scariest moment of my life. But then when I went to write the book all these years later, I realized that I was actually having panic attacks as a kid, and my parents had no idea. Like, we didn't know what a panic attack was. Like, we didn't have a name. No one was talking about mental health openly. Like, there
No,
was
you're
no
just being
internet.
dramatic. You're just being dramatic. Like, calm down.
Yes, literally, like one day as a child, I couldn't swallow. And I had had asthma as a kid. And so my parents thought it was asthma. So they took me to like the children's urgent care. And they said, well, we can't even run any tests on her. We can't even look in her throat because she's freaking out. We're going to give her some Valium. And that stuff knocked me on my butt. And all of my stats were completely fine. And the doctors just went, well, that was weird. You can take her home. She's okay. And that was it. Like, no one was like, maybe we should look
Like,
into what that
what
was about.
caused that? What happened? It's like, okay, she's fine. Throw some dirt in it. Get back to the grind.
Exactly. So I really had such an interesting time studying also the body during a panic attack and during depression and during anxiety, and realized that so many people, one, are lucky enough to never have a panic attack, but when someone they love or are dating or someone that suffers in their life from these things, a lot of times they have no idea how to help them. Like, they, unless you've gone through it, you really don't know how to be there for somebody in the quote unquote right way. So the way the book idea actually came about was that I had made my partner at the time, who I thought was, you know, the love of my life, that was going to be the person I was going to be with forever. I had made him a list at the airport. I was like, I know flying is a big trigger for me. Here's a list of things you could try if I have a panic attack. Everything from like, please listen if I tell you, like, if I don't want a sip of water, please don't force it on me, all the way to, hey, maybe like a really tight hug might help, or maybe not talking to me might help. Like, I just wanted to give him everything I could think of in my toolbox, you know, and gently encourage me to match my breath to yours, or like try giving me something cold to hold, like anything I could think of. I just wanted him to have this toolkit. And then a publisher approached me and was like, this is actually a pretty good list. Like, you should write a book about this, because the list had gone viral on Twitter back when it was called Twitter. And so a lot of that book was also me writing it for people who love people with mental health disorders. And, you know, I've loved people that had even like more severe mental health issues than I've suffered from. So even like I've learned through my journey with mental health, and I've been through the hardest times of my life with my mental health, thinking I would never, ever, like, get over that. I would never be able to survive that. I would never heal from it. And then I did. And so, when this big wave of heartbreak sent my body into fight or flight, when I was doing things that were so embarrassing, that were embarrassing me, that were embarrassing my, partner or my ex at that time. Like, I didn't recognize myself anytime I went through a breakup. Like, I would in my early years, in my teens and early 20s, drink and use drugs. Like, that was my coping mechanism. And anything that happened, I could have an excuse. I could blame it on this. I could blame it on that. Then I got really into feminism and I was like, well, I'm going to act like a man every time I go through a breakup. And I'm just going to do everything I want to do. I'm going to hurt people and not care. I'm going to be kind of like a little Tasmanian devil. Well, that didn't work out very well either. And it wasn't until I got sober from alcohol about almost 7 years ago now. Wow, that's crazy. That I started
Congratulations.
to, thank you. Yeah, it's one of the best things I ever did in my life, if not the best. I started to see how much different my nervous system felt when I had to approach a hard time in my life. Oh, sorry, my dogs are Cooper. I'm dog sitting my mom's dogs right now. So they're not my
Oh,
dogs
got it.
technically barking. They're the bad boys. So when I got to see what my body was like without that crutch of booze or drugs or, sex or whatever it was going to be, I really had to sit with myself and
Right, there
go,
was no external numbing anymore.
no. And I started to go, oh, I don't like this feeling. I don't like who I am. I don't like what I've used in the past. So I really got to figure something new out to be able to get through this. And so that's where, again, like this desperate need for answers came from writing the book. And funny enough, I forgot to mention the title. It's called Don't Do What I Did, because I'm basically giving you every single thing I did incorrectly and teaching you how not to go down that path. Like, take it from me as the girl who's been through it, done that, made the mistakes. Here again is a book that I wish that I had had growing up, and someone just to tell me, like, trust me, you're not gonna wanna do this, that, and the other, and you're gonna wanna know this, that, and the other about breakups and love.
I love that. So it's not necessarily as simple to your point of help me with my panic attack, give me something cold, match my breath. You're like, oh my God, I don't have anybody to hand me something cold. I don't have anybody to match my breath with. What do I do? So this was a whole new pool to get dunked in.
Oh my gosh, that's like the best way of putting it is when you're really just on your own. I realized I turned into a toddler. I turned into a baby, and I had to, again, go back into my life to see where these habits and patterns had come from and why they affected me so deeply in a way where, again, like I think breakups can be the most shocking and embarrassing time for someone where they can act out of character when they're saying things that they would never normally say. Like, we all have these moments, and most likely we will all go through some big breakup in our lifetime, whether it's like a first love or, a surprise that happens in the middle of our lives or even, later down the road, and we change and we grow. I can say this confidently that I know if a breakup happens again, I will be okay. And I don't think I could have said that 4 or 5 years ago.
Oh my gosh, I love this. So tell us what we need to know, because there are people that are probably healing from breakups. That might be you, dear listener. And there are a lot of people that are deathly afraid of more heartbreak because they didn't know the pool they were going to get dunked into and how they'd come out the other side. So let's go through your greatest hits in the book. And again, I'm so excited to be your first interview about this because you are going to profoundly impact so many people.
God, I hope, because I truly don't want to be like a wasted cause. I feel like the way I understand and heal is research. Like, I love figuring out why my body and brain is doing what it did. And that's like my step one is the self-awareness. And so for me, that's what I really wanted to instill in people was like, I broke the book up into three sections where the first section is called the mess. So that's the right now, the immediate, the panic attacks, the I'm gonna throw up, I'm screaming, I'm crying, I'm not okay. Then we
Didn't
move into
jump out of
this.
the window. Yeah, like I
Yes,
can't go
that
on.
one. Yes, the second part of the book is the change. So that's once we've like healed our nervous system a little bit and taken a breath and we're able to see everything from a little bit farther away, that's when we talk about the change. So this is now we're going back into our childhood and our past relationship to see, okay, that kind of sucked. How do we never do that again? And why did I do that? So that's where we get into a little bit of like our inner child and our future self work. And then the third part of the book is the healing, which, you know, talks about getting back out there, being able to trust yourself again, falling in love. And I say this right up at the top that like I'm not a relationship expert, very clearly, or else I wouldn't have written this book. But I do feel like I am a breakup expert at this point because I have gone through, you know, a 5-year relationship with someone who I thought was going to be my partner for the rest of my life. I've gone through situationship breakups. I've been cheated on. I've done the cheating. I have really run the gamut when it came to breakups. And so I feel like knowing what to do in each stage makes it so much more manageable because what a lot of people don't understand is that a breakup is registered in the body as a grief event. You know, they
Yeah.
did MRIs and CAT scans of people who had recently gone through a breakup, and they saw the same places in the brain light up as someone who's experienced a death of a loved one. So our bodies don't understand that that person is alive and well. And I say this that like I almost feel like it's worse because we still have access to this person.
Exactly.
Our bodies don't understand that. So they're going to do everything they've learned, their survival tactics to stop this hurt. And especially when, you know, we've done the future tripping about someone or we've become codependent with someone, when we've really put ourselves into something. And it hurts all that more. It doesn't really matter how long you were with someone. Like the hurt can be as big and as painful to someone, you know, in a 3-month relationship as a 3-year relationship. It all depends on how, you know, we grew up understanding feeling safety and our safety mechanisms and feeling okay within ourselves. So there's so much that I had to break it down that way to understand, like, first things first, like, okay. We're going through a death. We're going through a car crash. We need to treat this like an emergency event. This is not something that's I'm not going to just be able to fake it till I make it through this one. I'm not going to be able to just put on a happy face and go to work on Monday. Like I have to pull out all the stops to treat this like the event, the grief event that it is, and treat what's coming next, which I talk a lot about in the book, which is the withdrawal as serious withdrawal.
Yeah.
Because that's another thing that people don't realize is I use the, you know, the analogy or the metaphor in the book about how our ex is basically our drug. We become
Heroin.
addicted to somebody. Yeah. And it's the
Romantic love is
same.
an addiction.
Exactly. And especially when you have that rush and you fall in love and, you know, we talk about the honeymoon phase and all those things and limerence, you know, when we've pined after someone for so long, like we develop this addiction. So when we take away that drug, we are cold turkeying off of a drug. And we have to treat the withdrawal like a serious drug withdrawal. Because if we don't, what are we going to do? We're going to find another way to get our drug. We're going to, you know, fill the hole with the next person that shows us a little bit of that high. We're going to sleep our way through the breakup. We're going to spend our way through the break. We're going to look for that fill any way we can get it.
And I love that you're saying this because, you know, I know Dr. Helen Fisher, who's a great friend of mine, did these amazing fMRI studies, right, on people that
Yes.
had just come out of breakups and looking at their brains as the brains of an addict. And what does an addict do? And the brain of an addict says, okay, you've taken away my substance, my person. So what I'm going to do. The trick my brain will, and for all of you that are going through this, this is what happens. And just understanding that these are your brain's ploys is relieving to some extent. It will have you romanticize about, all of the good things about your partner, the beginning, how awesome they were, how safe you felt, which is a lot of BS because you broke up at the end and there were probably red flags and cracks and things. But again, your brain is trying to get its drug back. So understand that this torture sequence of this romanticizing the beginning is part and parcel of you going, okay, I get what you're doing, brain. Now, just understanding it and being able to talk back to your brain is incredibly powerful and makes you feel like, okay, this sucks, but I've got the steering wheel and I know that this is what my brain is trying to do.
Exactly. You hit the nail on the head where you almost have to separate yourself. Like you have to see addict you and real you. And knowing that in your breakup phase, especially in the mess, you're not going to be yourself. You're not going to be thinking like yourself. You're not going to be talking like yourself. You can try to convince yourself that you are totally level-headed and oh my God, this didn't even like bother you and you're totally fine. But that will show up in other ways if you're not going to address it, right? And something you said that I wanted to emphasize was like our brain's way of keeping that safety is trying to solve the problem to get the answer we actually desire, right? So, okay, he's not picking up my phone calls. Maybe if I show up to his house, he'll talk to me. Okay, if he's not texting me back, maybe if I reach out to his mom on Facebook, like it's going to try to solve the problem we feel like we couldn't fix. So it's going to trick you and try to give you all these ideas of things to do ultimately that are a trick, right? Because our brains don't like to be wrong. Our brains don't like to be blindsided. Our brains don't like to feel unsafe. So we're gonna claw, scream, and kill to get back to our safety net, which for people is, that lover.
So, when you went through this breakup after 5 years, it sounds tormenting.
Oh,
What
gosh.
did you find yourself doing? Like, okay, I'm doing all these things. Like, what were you say, don't do what I did. What did you do? And when did you realize, oh shit, okay, I'm off the rails?
Yeah, no, I mean, Cooper, please. I'm doing a business call. Thank you, sir. I was the number one self-sacrificer. So I project this, persona, but like it mostly is me online that I'm like this confident boss, older sister of the internet. Like that's always been who I am underneath. But when you add the layer of like who I am in a relationship, I am so fiercely loyal. Maybe it's the Leo in me, or maybe it's because, I grew up with my parents who are still married after 40 years together. Like to me, it was if I'm telling you you're my person, I don't play about that, right? And like I will stand up for us. I will do whatever it takes. I will go to all the therapies. I will do all the retreats. I will try the weird tantric breath work thing. I will, I self-sacrificed so much of who I actually was in hopes that my changing myself would make the other person change and show up the way I wanted. So I mean, the things this also started from a very young age, like my very first boyfriend in high school. I pretended to like the sports team he liked. I didn't know anything about that sports team, but I was like, I'm obsessed. I bought all the merch. I just wanted something to connect with him about and like talk to him on. And while, yeah, sure, maybe that's like a tactic to match
Connecting.
hobbies to connect. It really was a self-sacrifice because what was I doing on Saturday mornings now instead of hanging out with my friends or like discovering my own hobby? I was going to the bar hoping that he would be there to be watching the college football game. Like it was little things that started out that way when boys and like a relationship meant such a big deal in high school and in those preteen years where like that was the goal. I was taught like this embarrassingly patriarchal move of giving up pieces of myself, even though I was raised by a very strong woman. I was talking and writing and making videos about feminism, but behind the scenes, I was really chipping myself away to try and force pieces into a round hole with a square peg, or whatever that saying is.
And remember this: strong, smart, successful women have become that way in their lives, to your point, because we are dogs with the bone, right? It's like, can I take a failing company and turn it around? Can I, get promoted? Can I win this legal case? Whatever it is, and you take something that seems unfixable and with enough brute force and strategy, we're like, nope, I could solve it. Now, the issue is we take those traits that have worked so well for us in the world, like it did for you and so many of my clients. And now we apply that to broken relationships. Because if I could turn around a failing company, of course I can love that mess out of you.
Yeah. Oh, we love a challenge, right? Like, we inherently want to fix exactly like what you said. And our brains want to figure things out. We want to get the result we project in our head. And that's what I talk about right in the beginning of the relationship, is why future tripping is so dangerous in the early days, because we start to set up these patterns and these neural pathways of like, this is who I want to be with. This is how I project and see our life. And we fall in love with potential instead of the actual person. We cling to this idea of what our life is supposed to look like. And if the relationship doesn't go that way, we start to bend, we start to break, we start to fold, we start to change. It's so, the breakup begins, right? Like, with the patterns we start the day we meet that person. And I
Damn,
think
say
that's
that for the people in the back.
right. And I'm not hoping you break up with your person, but it's when I look back at every relationship I had, how I allowed myself to be treated, how I showed up in the relationship, how I did this, that, and the other was a huge reflection of patterns of what happened in the breakup, too.
Right, because it started on that foot.
Exactly.
Wow. Okay. So the mess. Anything, what do we need to know most importantly, if we haven't covered it yet, about navigating the mess? I guess the goal here is to understand it and maybe abridge the time a little bit in the mess.
Of course, like, it's the worst part. It's the physical, it's the stomach aches, it's the crying. Like, oh my God, I truly thought I had cried where I don't think I could cry anymore. Like, I didn't think there were tears left, right? And I prolonged the relationship, my big one, about 8 months too long. Like, we were both really hanging on. You know, he had a foot out the door, I had a foot out the door. We were so committed to her, but it was like an 8 month long breakup where we were just going, Jesus Christ, like, we just got to, someone's got to give. And you know, I talk a lot about that period of time, but there are such big pillars of emotion in that breakup, where there were days that I wasn't eating, I wasn't sleeping, I wasn't going to work, I was calling out sick, you know, I was screaming, I was saying things I didn't mean, you know, doing all the things. Like, I'll never forget so clearly this one time when we were fighting, and I was on the staircase, and there was a frame up on the wall of the staircase, and I was so angry, and I like looked at that picture, and I was like, I'm gonna hit that frame off the wall. Like, and I hit it, and it was the most like pathetic push of the frame, and it was just like, and it just like tipped off the wall, and it was like ding ding ding, and I was like, God, this is pathetic. Like, nothing about how I was acting was right. Like, it was so out of body, out of character. And the thing about the mess that I try to hammer into people's heads, not only about treating this like an addiction, not only, you know, surrounding yourself with your community because you're gonna need people, is admitting the truth of what it is. You are going through a breakup. And breakups suck. And I think we try to hide it. We don't tell people. We don't talk about it. And I remember feeling like, How am I supposed to go to work on Monday and exist? Like,
Function. Yeah.
nobody knows, and I'm just supposed to pretend that I'm not like my life, like my life has been
Devastated.
completely devastated. Like, he's moving his stuff out. Like, I have to find a new place to live. Like, I just couldn't pretend. And so something I started doing was just telling people the truth. Like, I didn't care if I was in a business meeting or at the gynecologist's office. Like, I would just say it, like, oh, part, like, excuse me, I'm going through a breakup right now. Like, my head's a little fuzzy, or like, oh, I'm not feeling very good. Like, oh, I can't come to your birthday, I'm going through a breakup. Like, I just started talking about it in a way where I wasn't going to be embarrassed or ashamed about it. Because 9 times out of 10, once I said that, everyone in the room resonated. Everyone went, oh, geez, I know exactly. Oh my God, I'm so sorry. I can't, oh, that's the, I remember exactly going through that. Or like, no one was like, get it together. You gotta, toughen up. Nobody said that to me. It was
And nobody, yeah,
always
no
men.
trauma dumping. Nobody's saying, oh my God,
No.
please, I don't even know you. Why are you trauma dumping? No,
Yeah.
no.
Like, people are so much kinder than we think. And also, the same applied for when I wrote a lot about like having panic attacks in public in my first book, where also you're not going to see people again in some instances. So, what do I care if I'm falling apart or crying in public? Like, I'm never going to see this person again. So, I started like openly crying in public. I cried in a Zara changing room, and I was like, why am I standing in here just crying? So, I went outside and cried on the bench at Zara. And then, I cried in a yoga class, and the entire yoga class started crying with me. And it was like this beautiful freedom crying, as I called it, where I just stopped pretending like things were okay. Because we preach that, right? Like, we preach about like it's okay to not be okay, and like you don't always have to be strong. And then our fear is that if we actually fall apart, we're gonna get shamed or made fun of or pointed at and laughed or seen as less than or like broken in some way. And for me, I was like, I'm gonna fall apart, and then maybe in a week or two or a month, whatever it takes me, I'm gonna come back just as amazing and strong and badass as you've ever known me. And that's okay. And I'm going to be the proof that that happens. I'm not going to let this take me out and take me under. And so that was like my biggest release and lesson learned during kind of like the messiest bits
Is
of the
tell
relationship
people,
breakup.
like tell people, don't hide it, and people will be empathic. And I love what you said. I tell my clients, we talk about this concept of how we look for people called elevator people, the people in your life that make you really happy and elevate you and also keep you grounded and safe, like an elevator. So surround yourself with your elevator person. And something that I tell people during breakups, and I'd be curious for your take on this, is cut off contact if you can with that person, right? Sometimes it's a divorce. We can't do that. We're co-parenting. There are extenuating situations. Maybe we work with the person, right? There are messes, and I get that. And sometimes when you can, delete, block, give yourself the space to come back to center. Because again, remember, every time that person texts you, emails you, what happens? Your addicted brain gets its fix. And it's like, I want more. I want more. I want more. And so
It's a
I
slot
tell
machine.
people, like, just delete, block. It doesn't mean you can't be friends long term. Just say, you know what? I need to heal. I will be in touch again when I am ready.
A
Draw that boundary.
1,000% nail on the head. I've done the being friends directly after a breakup. I've done the try to be friends with benefits. I've done messaging after I've been drinking. Like, I have done every version of that. And the most successful version is no contact. And like you said, sometimes we have assets shared. We have kids, we have pets, or whatever. You can still set boundaries about what you will and won't talk about and interact with that person. And you can mediate. You can have someone in your close circle be there with you. You can have that person do the drop off. Like, there are so many versions that we also will try to negotiate with ourselves of being like, well, I have to see him because we have a dog together and I have to drop. No, you don't. Girl, that's an excuse. You can ask your friend. You get to ask an Uber courier to take your dog. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
Correct. Correct.
there
There are
are
pet Ubers.
yes, there are ways. There are people in your life, I guarantee you, who are devastated for you or thrilled for you that this breakup has happened, and more than willing to be your support system. And all you have to do is ask. And I think, like, the catching yourself of knowing when you're looking for that high, even if you tell yourself you're not, or trying to trick yourself into thinking, well, I'm just gonna look at his Instagram. Okay, why? Like, what is that solving? Like, how am I gonna feel after? Which I talk a lot too about, is thinking about your future self, right? Like, how do we set up 5 minutes from now, Kelsey, for success? Am I gonna feel like shit after looking through his stories, or am I gonna feel better? Like, there's no guarantee I'm gonna feel better. Most likely, 9 times out of 10, I'm gonna feel worse. So how do I set my future self up for success? And how do I take the pause, which is like a huge thing I talk about too, which is a massive part of breaking up, is learning how to take the pause and learning how to respond instead of react, right? Reacting is, we're just letting our nervous system take over. We're allowing that toddler self out. We scream, we cry, we say the thing we don't mean. We key his car, whatever you did, it's none of my business. Versus responding, which is after we've taken that breath. We've learned how to pause. We've learned how to walk away. We've learned how to do our box breathing, or go punch a punching bag, or, find a feel-good snack, whatever it is, to feel more regulated. Then we can come back to that dysregulation. Because if you're meeting dysregulation with dysregulation, girl, I got bad news for you. It ain't gonna come out regulated.
No, absolutely. I love that. And is there a time that it takes to get through the mess, or does that vary for everybody?
It totally varies for everyone. I remember hearing back in, like, I don't know, maybe reading Cosmo in high school or something, where they're like, the equation is, it takes half as long as the relationship was to get over someone. So if we dated 10 years, it's going to take me 5
No, hell
years
no,
to
hell
get
no.
a what? And I'm going to be honest with you. A relationship that the book is centered around is obviously that big 5-year relationship, but I talk about a relationship I got into directly after that breakup, where I was like, well, we were breaking up on and off, like, we were in and out for 7 months. So, like, I've already done every, like, I did my healing during that time. I did my crying. I'm done. I'm good. I'm definitely right. I just need to get back out there. I just need to distract myself. Well, guess what? When you're coming from a place of an unmet need or a lack, the first person that shows you that little bit of a need is going to become your drug. So I had come out of a relationship where I wasn't feeling needed, I wasn't feeling loved, I wasn't feeling, attractive, and I went out on a date with somebody who became obsessed with me. They were always complimenting me, they were texting me back right away. They were out of the blue, giving me this showering of words of affirmation, which I didn't get from my partner towards the end. And so I immediately was like, oh my God, this is how a relationship is supposed to look. How lucky am I to come out of hell into this beautiful obsession? Meanwhile, I'm ignoring every red flag that that person was waving in my freaking face. And I really crashed out when that ended. And I realized that I wasn't just grieving for that, situationship that had happened directly after, but I had never really properly grieved that 5-year relationship. And so my timeline didn't look anything linear like it was supposed to. It still sometimes I can hear a song. I can smell the Chanel men's cologne. Like, there are certain triggers out in the world that still to this day will make me feel a type of way. And the difference
For
between
sure.
me, texting and folding and caving and, responding over reacting is as simple as taking the pause and knowing all of this information. Oh, I see what's happening, brain. You're trying to protect me. Oh, I see what's happening. You're trying to find a dopamine hit. Okay. Knowing what your inside wiring is trying to accomplish is so helpful to see from the outside in those scenarios.
Oh, I love that. You're so correct. And now let's get to the change and the healing. Let's talk about that. What do we do? What do we do? We've had the ice cream. We've gained 10 pounds. We need new clothes. What we've kind of said, okay, I can put my face out in the world at this point. I've cut off contact. I've had my elevator people around me. I've written the letter I never sent. I boxed up all their shit and sent it back or burned it. What do I do now?
Yeah, so when you're not in that immediate, fight or flight, and you've had the time to say, like, okay, I can go to work and not break down crying in the middle of the day. Though that still happens even when I'm not going through a breakup. So, like, maybe that's not the best example, but you know what I'm saying. You're going through the change. So now we get to look back at our patterns and our behaviors. And I tried to stay away from, too rigid of beliefs about, our parents being the ones to blame for everything, or your attachment style being an end all be all, because I don't want people to also feel like they have to put themselves into a box and they're incapable of being more than their trauma and response. Because, like, let's be real, an attachment style is developed mostly because of trauma. And I like to start to pick apart, like, what is actually us? How do we actually react? And for me, it was like, I'm actually a very happy, outgoing person, but I had become this very angry, jaded, fearful person that couldn't be on their own. Like, I was afraid of being alone. I was uncomfortable when I didn't have that romantic support. I didn't feel worthy when I didn't have someone pining after me. Like, I had to look at these really hard truths about myself and say, what maybe contributed to my reaction to this breakup? Because maybe the breakup wasn't our fault necessarily. Maybe, we didn't even see it coming. Maybe we feel like we did everything right in that relationship. But how did I get here with a person that treated me this way, or pulled the rug out from underneath me, or, like, I had no idea it was coming. Like, how did I get to that? Because I do have to take some responsibility
For sure.
for ignoring the signs, or for ignoring the, whatever. So the change, that part is really about us. That second part is really about coming home to yourself, figuring out where your edges still feel rough. And the thing is like, you don't have to solve it, right? We're not gonna, like, do inner child work once, like, have a batch of mushrooms and, like, be healed and be fine and, like, actualized and be like, oh my God, moving into a relationship now, I'm gonna be perfect. Like, no, we're still gonna make mistakes. We're still gonna cry. We're still gonna scream. We're still gonna probably throw up, but we're gonna have an awareness, and we're gonna have a toolkit now that we use before we completely fall apart again. And that has bled into every part of my life beyond romantic relationships. That's made me just a more well-rounded friend, daughter, human being in the career space, in friendships, whatever, mentorships. Like, everything I learned about changing my reactions and healing parts of myself in the breakup has helped me tenfold in the world.
Tell me, how do we change our reactions? I love, there's an old quote that says, like, all magic in the world happens between stimulus and response, right? It's that moment of pause that determines so much of what happens. So how do we change?
Man, if it was a simple one-worded answer, I think I'd be like a billionaire by now, right? Like, I
Billionaire,
would
you and
sell
I could
it.
just get off this podcast and we'd be good.
No, I'd be in a different tax bracket if I had, like, one simple answer, right? Like, it's going to depend on, again, how were you raised? How did you see love modeled around you? How did you grow confidence? How did you see self-worth? Like, how self-aware are you? Do you maybe need someone close to you that you trust and love to sit you down and say, like, you're acting like this. You need to wake up, or, like, you keep falling for the same type of guy. Like, how are you not seeing this when everybody else is, right? Like, the
Like, you can't be
hardest.
alone. You cannot be alone.
Yes.
Why?
Why? And that first step, that like curiosity, I didn't realize that that was such a gift because so many people go through this life never giving a shit to reflect on that. So many people think that they don't have a problem, that they're perfect, that it was the other person to blame. Like my favorite is when someone's like, my ex was crazy. I'm like, that's probably the biggest red flag of when someone says that to me is like, my ex was crazy. And I'm like, we're gonna come unpack that later. We're gonna unpack why you allowed quote unquote crazy to be with you. Like let's figure this out. Like, you know? So there are so many ways to change to answer your question. But I think whether it is, you know, something like therapy or microdosing or going to CODA, which is Codependency Anonymous, or reading a book or reflection, like there's so many therapeutic methods
Get a dating
that
coach.
get a dating coach, okay? That could be helpful, but I think none of that can happen if we don't become curious about ourselves first
Ourselves.
in that way.
No, you're so right. So really reflect on who am I? What do I believe? Which one of these beliefs have been negative, right? And how has that showed up in my life? Right. And I think the beauty of, and I asked you the question about change because I believe every person that wants to change can change because our brains are not fixed. They are malleable, changeable, neuroplastic,
You have
whatever
to
you need.
change.
You have to change. And most importantly, smart daters, it is possible to change. Right. We've got to identify the negative stuff. We've got to reframe it. We have to know that, yes, you can reprogram your brain with the positive and the shit works, right? I'm steeped in neuroscience to understand, no, it's not fixed. So be inspired by that, that there is a way to talk to that little 3-pound mass that governs everything in our body. And if you don't think it's possible, think about, are you thinking about your heartbeat right now? No.
No.
Are you thinking about how you're breathing right now? No. Are you thinking
No.
about your hair growing right now? No. There's lots of ways to get in there and get into that subconscious to talk to it, to reprogram it, to be different and to change. And if you don't believe me, call me and we'll try together.
Hell yeah. I love that. That was such a period on the end of that sentence.
Tell me if you agree.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I talk a lot about change in the book, and the book is also a workbook. I don't think I mentioned that, but it's
Oh,
a
amazing.
yeah, that my first one was as well, and people loved that. Like they loved being able to write then and there, dump out in their brains what they had just learned about or a key
Obsessed.
discovery. Yeah, so I have that available for people is if they don't even know where to begin. I'm like, here are the actual literal steps and questions to get to what we're talking about. And one of my favorite quotes is like, nothing changes if nothing changes. And like, the only certainty is life is that not, something will change. And we, like you said, like our brains are neuroplastic. We absolutely have to keep growing and learning. And I'm sure you've heard this quote a million times, but like when you're married for 50 plus years, you've married four different people because we change. And like the hope is that we grow together and we grow in the same direction. But if we grow apart, that doesn't mean you failed. It doesn't mean it wasn't love. It doesn't mean that the other person didn't love you. It just means you changed. And that's kind of amazing.
And I would guess change is what leads to healing. Let's go there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like the healing part is what we all just want to rush to, right? Like we all just sort of want to go to the back of the book and be like, okay, I want to get to the part where I'm healed, right? And that's just not how it works. Like I said, like I still make mistakes in relationships. I still am reactive sometimes. Like I'm a very big feeler. I'm very sensitive, and sometimes I have to catch myself and go like, And something I say, and maybe you will or won't agree with this, I'm curious as like the expert, is I kind of poo-poo on the idea of like you have to be ready there's going to be like a time where you just are ready to get back out there and you're healed and you're done. And I don't really believe in if you're not dating to marry, then you shouldn't be dating at all. You know, like I think dating can be a bit of a sport, like a bit of an exercise and practice in just human connection. It doesn't always have to lead to love and like procreation. I just think it's important to not go on the extreme of one side of the spectrum, right? Like I don't want you to come out of this and be like, I can never fall in love again. Like I don't ever want to date, or and I don't want you to get back out there and fall in love with the next person who like tells you you're pretty. So how do we find that balance, right? And I think you're only going to find that balance by trying again, right? And that doesn't mean you go on the date and trauma dump about the relationship and, you know, give all your, you know, I used to do this thing where I'd be like, here's all my problems. You better know what you're getting into. Like, here's my
Here's
shit
my list.
pile.
Here's my list.
Yes. Like it's coming in with a presence and a mindfulness of the other person sitting across from you, right? Like, what have they gone through? What are they made up of? What's the stuff that makes them tick? And I try to see that as like not blaming them for my partner's past mistakes. Like when I feel comfortable enough, A, sitting alone and not feeling like I'm going to combust, I'm like, okay, I think I can actually go out on a date now. And two is not making it feel like an interview or an interrogation. Like if I can just sit there and have coffee with someone and make the stakes as low as humanly possible, then I feel like, hey, I wasn't able to do this a few months ago, a few weeks ago, a few years ago. So that's progress.
I love that. And to your point about asking me about, like, do you feel like there's a time when people are ready? For me, ready is not a feeling and it never will be. It is a decision.
I love that quote. I love that. I say that all the time. It's just, we said that before this interview. We said, this is going to be the best interview ever because we just decided it would be.
Because we decided it would be. And I mean, I feel like, you know, we could go on for hours and just wax lyrical about all of this. But I think that to your point, I think that from my vantage point, founding Smart Dating Academy 16 years ago, right? And we help people in this phase post breakup, post loss, post divorce, right? Reconstitute themselves with the process. And get back out there with guardrails, with pink sparkly bubble wrap around you through this. And I think that the question for you, dear listener, is what does ready mean? Does ready mean I have the confidence and the knowledge, the self-awareness, and the other awareness to get back out there and not make, you know, do the things I've done in the past again? Or do I need some help around this process? And I would say, you know, and this isn't a shameless plug, but what I want to do is mitigate shame for people. It is finding the lid to your pot, finding the right partner, whether you get married or spend your life with them, is the most important decision you will ever make in your life. Right? It
Totally.
determines 90% of your happiness or 90% of your misery.
Oof.
And if you need help around that, 20, 30 years ago, this didn't exist.
No.
Today it does, right? You can read books like Kelsey's. Where was that book when I needed it? You can work with Smart Dating Academy. Who would hold your hand through the process and say, nope, Kelsey, that's a red flag again. We've got to get this one. Here's the goodbye sandwich that we're going to text this person. We're going to come back to these two other guys and we're going to do date four and date seven with these other guys. And this is how we've had zero divorces. So when you need help, seek the help, be it a therapist, a book, a program, a great dating coach. Invest in yourself because your heart and you are worth building that confidence in and knowing that. Life isn't going to be perfect. It's not like you'll never have a paper cut, but you work with us, you do the work, you're not going to have a dumpster fire on your hands.
I couldn't have said it better myself. You freaking nailed that.
You know, and I think that as part of the healing for all of you, think about what that means for you, whether you're in, I love your phases, the mess, the change, or the healing. For some of you, you may not even be able to discern the difference and where you are at this point because there's sloppy edges across life, right? Everything, life is like a plate of Thanksgiving food at a buffet. You go down, and if you're picky and you want your turkey to sit here and your mashed potatoes to sit here and your cranberry sauce to sit here, guess what? By the time you put that stuff on your plate and you take a seat at the back of the room, everything's touching. That's how life is.
That's life, baby, is a turkey plate.
Oh my gosh. Well, tell us about this amazing book. We're going to have a link to it in the show notes, and we're so excited for it. Where can we find more of you?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much again for having me on. The book is called Don't Do What I Did, Break Up and Bounce Back. It is out May 6th officially, and it is available for pre-order now, which I guess the link will be down below.
Oh my God, can I pre-order mine right now with you?
I'm already sending you one, girl. Forget about it.
Will you sign it for me?
Duh.
Oh my gosh, I'm the luckiest person in the world. I have the best job in the
Amazing.
world to interview people like you, Kelsey. Thank you so much for being on the Smart Dating Academy
Oh, you're
podcast and for
awesome.
being the first interview for your book. I'm beyond honored. And smart daters, I'm beyond honored that you chose to listen to this episode in its
Yes.
entirety with my new bestie, Kelsey. And if you're ready to do something different, remember, ready isn't a feeling, it's a decision. Make a freaking decision about yourself and your life. And what are you going to decide to do today that is going to get you out of the mess, into the change, into the healing, and back out there on the quest to find love? So do something today. Decide to do something today. If you loved this, I'll give you a decision. Go on to Spotify or Apple or whatever the hell you're listening to this. Give it a 5-star. Better yet, send it to somebody who is hurting.
Yes.
Send it to somebody who needs to hear the two of us talking and helping and knowing that the light at the tunnel, at the end of the tunnel, is there and it's closer than you think if you start to do the right thing. So until next episode, my friends, I bid you farewell and reach out for help at smartdatingacademy.com. Thanks for listening. And as always, download us, share us, show us the love. Follow Instagram at Smart Dating Academy. And if you or someone you know wants to learn more, check out our website at smartdatingacademy.com. We're here to bring you love.